present Brothers-in-Law by Henry Cecil and Basil Dalton, based on the novel by Henry Cecil, starring Richard Byers with John Glyn Jones, Bridget Armstrong, Gene Anderson, and featuring Henry McGee as Mr. Crabtree. Episode 11, Crabtree Disease, with this week's guest star, John the Measurer.
Oh, yes? Yes. Sir, I must ring off now, Sally, darling, or Mother will be fussing about the telephone bill again.
Roger, say goodbye to Sally and ring off my telephone bill.
So you won't have to pay it, Mother.
Why not?
I mean, you won't have to pay for the call.
If you think I'd try to defraud the post office by pretending they made a mistake in my bill, as a matter of fact, I would if I thought I could get away with it.
Mother, you will not have to pay for this call because Sally's just reminded me. I transferred the chance.
Reminded you?
I've forgotten. It was over an hour ago.
Roger, are you trying to diddle me?
As if I would.
Then who did you transfer the charge to?
Sally, of course.
Uh-huh.
What do you mean, uh-huh?
I mean, uh-huh, you are trying to diddle me. That's not true.
Mother, I couldn't tell a lie to you.
You couldn't and get away with it. And you couldn't have transferred the charge to Sally because she isn't at home.
But of course she isn't, Mother. She's staying with her uncle in Scotland. I transferred the charge to his number.
Poor man. He won't be best pleased. Well, it wasn't very fair of you, darling.
Well, it's perfectly fair. Last time Sally rang me, she transferred the charge to your number.
Oh, good. Roger! You talked for 2 hours that time.
Hello, hello. Who's that? Oh, hello, Sally. Oh, are you still there? He what? What? Hold on. Mother, you were right. Her uncle isn't best pleased.
Nor am I.
Well, goodbye then, Sally, darling. Don't stay away too long and don't do anything I would.
You don't mean that?
Yes, I do. Oh, no, don't go. Sally, don't do anything I wouldn't. What? What? Darling, I never do that. Well, hardly ever. What? What? Oh, Lord. Mother, her uncle's been listening in on the extension. What? What? He threatened to cut his own telephone wires.
Oh. He couldn't. Well, he wouldn't.
He has.
What a good idea. I wonder which bit of wire you have to cut.
Well, anywhere between the instrument and the junction box.
Well, somewhere here.
Yeah, that would do it.
Oh, thank you, darling.
Mother, don't you dare.
Why not? You can't ring Sally again.
I can ring Joy.
Uh-huh.
But don't keep saying uh-huh.
When I think uh-huh, I shall say uh-huh.
But please don't think it.
I can't help it, Roger.
You've got to stop going on about Joy. I'm engaged to Sally, and that's that.
You should always get disengaged.
Mother, I know you don't like Sally very much, and I know you do like Joy, but that's got nothing to do with it. It is my future. You've got to understand, I'm devoted to Sally. I'd lay down my life for her.
You wouldn't have much future if you did.
Please, how can you be so flippant? I mean it.
Darling, do you really lay down your life for her?
Well, it wouldn't be for her, really. She'd be absolutely miserable if she was left a widow.
She wouldn't be. You're not married yet.
Well, you know what I mean. If I died, Sally would never forgive me. What I mean is... Well... Her life would be finished.
No, darling, yours would be finished. She'd get over it.
She wouldn't. Would she?
People do. So why don't you give Joy a ring and take her out this evening?
That's a good idea. Thank you, Mother. I will. No, no, I won't. What are you doing to me? This is more than flesh and blood can stand. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. You, a mother, dragging her son from the straight and narrow and positively propelling him down the primrose path.
Darling, I'm only thinking of you. I want you to be absolutely sure that you've chosen the right girl, and you must admit you do still hanker after Joy occasionally.
I hanker all the time.
Then go and get it out of your system.
Mother, what a beastly suggestion.
If you can't, then admit you were wrong and break off your engagement to Sally. So why not ring her up before they cut off the telephone?
Well, I'll tell you why, Mother, because of honor.
Honor? Darling, you've got another girl.
No, Mother, I mean a man of honor. Oh, now, really, Mother. Not because Sally's away sucking up to a rich uncle. There's no excuse for me breaking my word. I promised I wouldn't see Joy except on business, and I won't.
Quite right, but I'm sure you could think up some business excuse for taking her out.
Yes, come to think of it, I'm sure I could. No, no! Look, please, I won't do it, not tonight anyway. I've got to work this evening, a brief to study.
From Joy's uncle?
No, thank heaven, from solicitors who'd never briefed me before. So I've simply got to do well. It's rather a complicated case about a chap who wanted to buy a typewriter.
In the High Court, is it?
No, County Court. Judge Prime. I'd never been in front of him before, but I want to make a good impression, so that's another reason for working tonight.
All right, darling, you go to work, and I'll fetch you some wet towels and some strong black...
So far, Mr. Thursby, I've learned from your not very elegant address that your client wished to buy a typewriter. Will you go on from there, please?
If Your Honor pleases. Well, Your Honor, as my client wanted to buy a typewriter, he contacted Mr. Brown and asked him if he'd be kind enough.
What did you say, Mr. Thursby?
I said that my client contacted Mr. Brown.
Yes, I was afraid you said that. Is this kid being tried in England or in the United States of America?
Well, in England.
Yes, well, why not speak English, Mr. Thursby?
Your Honor doesn't like the word contacted?
I certainly do not.
I've often heard it used, Your Honor.
Well, lots of words, Mr. Thursby, which is both of us use, and I've often heard use, but we do not use them in court. This is an English court. Kindly speak reasonably good English.
Well, I'm sorry, Your Honor. May I continue?
You may go on, Mr.
thank you. Now, where was I? Yes. Now, I was about to adumbrate, to Your Honor.
To what?
Adumbrate. It's an English word, Your Honor. I was about to adumbrate my client's motivation.
Mr. Thursby, do you mean you were going to outline your client's reasons for his actions?
I couldn't have put it better myself, Your Honor.
You could, you see, Mr. Thursby, if you had stuck to English. I commend farther to you, Mr. Thursby, the passage on love of the long word. Short words are not only handier to use, but more powerful in effect. Extra syllables reduce, not increase, vigor. This is particularly so in English, where the native words are short and the long words are foreign. Now, just learn that by heart, Mr. Thursby. As I have.
But Your Honor prefers native words and short words?
Yes, Mr. Thursby. Simple words with plain meaning.
Very good, Your Honor. May I recommence now?
Mr. Thursby.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. May I begin again?
No, Mr. Thursby, no. You may go on from where you left off.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. But the reason that my client got in touch with Mr. Brown, is that better, Your Honor?
Don't be impertinent, Mr. Thursby. Furthermore, you can rely on me to let you know when I'm not satisfied with your English.
Yes, I gather that, Your Honor. The reason why my client got in touch with Mr. Brown was because he didn't like the idea of a second-hand machine.
Yes, see. How do you spell idea, Mr. Thursby?
I-D-E-A?
Mm-hmm. And why do you pronounce it as though there were an R in it?
Oh, the intrusive R, Your Honor. Oh, well, the BBC use it regularly.
What did you say?
Well, but the BBC use it regularly.
The British Broadcasting Corporation is a creature of statute. Are you suggesting that the corporation itself can speak?
Only by its officials and agents, Your Honor.
Well, is that what you mean? Please say so. If the British Broadcasting Corporation can speak, it can also have meals, wash itself, and go to bed.
Its officials and agents do that, my Your Honor.
Well, how do you know? Have you seen them?
No, I haven't actually seen them, no. But I assume that they do these things and everyone else does.
In this court, I accept counsel not to state things as facts unless he knows of them personally.
But very well, Your Honor, I will state as a fact that the agents of the British Broadcasting Corporation regularly talk about the idea of and putting their umbrella up.
I wish you'd speak in decent English, Mr. Thursby. Agent is in the plural. There is in the plural. Umbrella is in the singular. Are you suggesting that all the agents of the British Broadcasting Corporation share one umbrella?
Well, of course not, Your Honor.
Then why say so? You said that agents of the British Broadcasting Corporation spoke about putting their umbrella up. You mean, I suppose, that each individual agent of the British Broadcasting Corporation speaks about putting his umbrella up.
But not everyone, Your Honor.
Well, then I repeat, why did you say so? You mean that there's more than one individual employed by the British Broadcasting Corporation who speaks about putting his umbrella up?
Yes, Your Honor, yes. One or two of the BBC's answers do not use the intrusive R.
Then I wish you'd follow their example, Mr. Thursby.
May I ask Your Honor a question?
Well, if you can frame it in reasonable English, yes.
Would Your Honor prefer that I should tell Your Honor about this case as well as I can in such English as comes to hand, or that I should concentrate upon speaking the best English that I can with the possible result that I shall forget to tell Your Honor something important about the case?
If you prefer to practice at the bar, you should be able to do both. You're supposed to have been educated, and your mother tongue is English. If that is not a reflection upon money. So far, I might have been listening to a United States attorney pleading a cause in Wisconsin.
Oh, no, Your Honor, no, with respect. he would have said something like this.
See here, Your Honor, the viability of the motivational relationship between the litigants consequential to their behavioral pattern.
Now, how does... Carnegie's that horrible accent for the private theatricals in which you no doubt indulge. Then you ought to be preparing your cases to argue the next day. Now, kindly continue to open the case. So far, all I know is that your client desired to purchase a typewriter.
No, Your Honor.
He didn't.
No, he wanted to buy a typewriter.
Don't be so down-hearted, Thursday, with him, or we all know Judge Prime. Just take no notice of his little eccentricity.
But how can I, Grimes? He kicks me off for almost everything I say. How would I concentrate on presenting the case properly when all the time I'm thinking of what's going to happen to me if I use the wrong word?
Have you never canoodled in a snowstorm, my dear fella?
What did you say?
Said, have you never made love in a snowstorm?
Well, I can't, because I have, no. But I don't quite see what I've got to do with it.
Oh, tell you, my dear fellow, if you're out in the freezing cold but you're making love, you don't notice the freezing cold because you're concentrating on the other thing.
Well, I can't make love in a county court.
I'm not suggesting you should, my dear fellow. The usher would stop you anyway if the judge didn't. All I'm saying is you should concentrate on the important things. Now, look, if you've got an attractive girl out in a storm, you concentrate on her and you forget the snow. When you're in front of Judge Prime, concentrate on your case and forget the old fool's idiosyncrasies.
May I ask you a question, Grant?
What is it, my dear fellow?
Have you ever made love to a girl in a snowstorm?
Of course not, my dear fellow. We went inside. I've done it in the rain.
Done it?
Canoodled in the rain, my dear fellow. I got so true. Didn't realize it till it was over.
But I tell you, I was soaked through. Quarter of an hour with Judge Prime, I was certainly soaked through.
Yes. Where's the same for your opponent, my dear fellow? Who is he, by the way?
A man called Crabtree.
Crabtree?
Yes. Do you know him?
You're in luck, my dear fellow. After listening to Crabtree for 5 minutes, Judge Prime will think you speak the most perfect English that's ever been spoken. You think you're like Abraham Lincoln's Isaac.
But didn't he sacrifice him?
Ah, he didn't finish the job, my dear fellow. He stopped in time and he used that poor ram caught in a thicket instead. Oh, we've been sorry for that ram. When's the case going on?
On Monday.
Well, poor old Crabtree will be caught in a thicket on Monday. You watch, my dear fellow.
But what's wrong with Crabtree?
You'll see for yourself, my dear fellow. But it boils down to this. Every judge wants to understand what the case is about.
Well, I must say that seems reasonable.
Just reasonable, my dear fellow. It's essential.
But where does Crabtree come into this?
Well, I'm telling you, look. It's reasonably certain that if Crabtree opens a case to the court, the judge will not have the faintest idea of what it's about. He wonder whether he's trying an accident case, a claim for damages, a breach of contract, an action between a landlord and tenant, or between two squabbling neighbors. To refine form of torture, my dear Thursday. There's the judge, good, bad, or indifferent, wetting his guts out to try and understand what the case is about, and his Crabtree making it tolerably certain he won't be able to. I've seen him reduce judges almost to tears. Now, look, you don't like Judge Prime, do you?
I must admit, between you and I hate his guts.
Right. When Crabtree's been at him for 5 or 10 minutes, you'll be so sorry for him that you'll be almost prepared to shoot him.
To shoot the judge? Or to put him out of his misery?
Not a bad idea, though, no. Look, I meant shoot Crabtree. I've actually seen a judge who was an agnostic look upward when Crabtree was addressing him and obviously pray to heaven that Crabtree would be struck dumb or something.
Yeah. I might try that, Grant. Pray that something had happened to Judge Prime. You talk of torture, you should see me. Honestly, what is this to me?
I don't know what happened to the judge, my dear fellow, when Crabtree is going. When's the case coming on?
Well, I told you, on Monday.
Oh, yes.
I've got the weekend to think about it.
You can sleep easy, my dear fellow. All the same, I should practice concentrating.
Love in a snowstorm, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, I may have to settle for canoodling in the rain. Canoodling in the rain, canoodling in the rain. What a glorious feeling I find in you.
Darling, oughtn't you to be so happy?
Why not?
Well, you said that judge was an absolute brute. And Sally's in Scotland with a telephone cut, and you won't see Joy.
Uh-huh.
Roger, not again.
When I think,
I say, Lovely weather, isn't it?
Don't change the subject.
I'm not.
And it isn't lovely anyway. Thick black clouds everywhere.
That's what I mean.
I don't understand. Am I very stupid?
No, about average, I say.
Oh, sorry. Oh, do you mean it's lovely that the rain hasn't actually started coming down?
Good heavens, no, it's got to come down. It must, it will. Or I'll never believe in prayer again.
Have you been praying for rain?
Like a mantis. Did you hear the weather forecast this evening?
As a matter of fact, I did. A belt of heavy rain accompanied by thunder is expected to pass over somewhere or other at some time or other.
But when?
This evening, I think.
But where?
Over North London, I think, or was it South London, or... But it's West, I can't remember.
But, Mother, think, please think. For heaven's sake, think. It's important.
Why?
I must know whether to do it on Wimbledon Common or Hampstead Heath.
Roger, how lovely to see you again, darling.
Joy, this is purely business, you understand?
Of course. What sort of business?
I want you to help me with a case.
Of course I will, darling. What's it about?
It doesn't matter what it's about.
Then how can I help?
By coming with me to Hampstead Heath.
Hampstead Heath, how lovely. But the weather forecast isn't very good, is it?
It's dead right from our point of view.
Anything you say, Roger. As long as I'm with you, I don't care if it hails, snows, or thunders.
Uh-huh. You mean you wouldn't notice it if I was there?
Not if you were kissing me.
That's exactly what I'm going to do.
And why wait? Why not do it now?
It's no good indoors.
It is, darling. I promise you, it's marvelous indoors. Let me show you.
No, Joy, no. It's no good. It's got to be Hampstead Heath.
Roger, you sound kinky or something. How exciting.
No, look, it's got to be Hampstead Heath because of the weather forecast. Otherwise, I'd be breaking my word to Sally. You do understand that, don't you?
No, darling, I don't understand a word you're saying, but it doesn't matter.
Look, I gave my word never to see you except on business, and I intend to keep my word.
By taking me to Hampstead Heath?
Right.
Some business.
It's true, John. It's an experiment to help me with this case.
You don't have to convince me, darling. I believe you. When do we go?
As soon as it's dark.
It will be by the time we get there.
Oh, yes, but it will. All right, let's go.
I'll just get an umbrella.
Oh, no, you mustn't.
Why not?
Because I can't do it on an umbrella.
Darling, you are kinky. I can't wait.
I think we've gone far enough.
Roger, you haven't done anything yet.
What? Ah, listen to that thunder. That's it, that's better. Are you frightened of thunder, Joy?
Not when I'm with you, darling.
You mean, when you're with me, you don't notice what's happening? You don't see the lightning or hear the thunder?
Not if you hold me close, Roger, like you used to do.
What I used to do has nothing to do with it. I shall tell Sally all about this, and I'm sure she'll understand. If she's been available, I've done it with her instead of you.
Well, Roger, you do say the nicer thing.
Look, I'm not mean to be unkind, but you've got to keep remembering that it's entirely in the way of business. To help me with this case, I've got a monkey. I want to test something that Grimes said.
What are you going to do to me, Roger?
You'll see. Here it comes. That's more like it, isn't it, Bella? Good. This is for the rain. Lovely. We'll be along now. Here it comes. Wait for it.
Wait for what, Roger?
There it goes. Oh, lovely big black ball. Oh, lovely. Yes, right. Now we can begin. Right. Now, I'll tell you what's going to happen. I'm going to put my arms around you, and you're going to put your arms around me.
Now?
Yeah. Now, just wait till I finish. Now, then I'm going to kiss you and hold you to me, and I want you to tell me when you can't feel the rain or hear the thunder. Lovely. Good. Lovely. Now, you both heard that, didn't we? Right. You heard that? I heard that. Right. Now, let's begin and see what we can't hear it anymore. See? Right. Now. How's that?
I can still hear the rain, Roger.
Oh, What about that?
I can still hear it.
There's nothing for it, then. What about that?
Oh, Roger, darling, I can't hear anything now except your heart beating.
Ditto. Oh, Joy. It worked. Good old Grimes. He knows a thing or two. You know, he really does. I'll be a match for Judge Prime now. I really learned how to concentrate. Thank you, Joy.
Very pleased to be in a service, Roger. Do you think one experiment was enough? Oughtn't we repeat it tomorrow?
Well, if Sally were back, I'd repeat it with her.
But she isn't.
No, that's perfectly true. Shouldn't she mind my trying it again with you, Joyce?
I'm sure she wouldn't if she knew the reason. She's so terribly intelligent, Sally is.
I think you're right. Sally would understand. Same time tomorrow night, then, Joyce.
Lovely, darling.
Oh, but there is one thing. Supposing the weather man's wrong, and it's fine tomorrow night. Well, that would be no good, would it?
It would be all right if it was cold. I mean, if you were walking over Hampstead Heath, and it was very cold, you'd put your gloves on, wouldn't you?
Yes, I certainly would.
But if you were with me on Hampstead Heath, and it was very cold, you'd take your gloves off, wouldn't you?
You're absolutely right, Joyce. Tomorrow night. Same time, same place. Whatever the weather.
And that is the case for the plaintiff, Your Honor.
Very well. Now, Mr. Crabtree, will you kindly open the defense?
May it please Your Honor, the defense in this case... But before I come to the actual defense, there's something I ought to say to Your Honor. So perhaps it would possibly be better to refer Your Honor to page 40 of the correspondence in this first instance. If Your Honor would turn to that page... Oh, no. Your Honor hasn't got a copy of the correspondence. Well, I'll hand it up later, and in the meantime, if Your Honor would bear with me.
I'm bearing with you as well as I can, Mr. Crabtree, but could you please tell me what on earth you're talking about?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, if I'm not making myself plain, but as I was telling Your Honor in paragraph 8 of the letter on page 50... Oh, it hasn't got 8 paragraphs. I didn't mean paragraph 8. Actually, it's not on page 50. But if Your Honor would be good enough to turn to page 47. Oh. Ah. Your Honor still haven't got a copy of the correspondence. I'll see that it's handed up, Your Honor, and then Your Honor will be able to follow my submission better.
I could follow your submission better, Mr. Crabtree, if I knew what it was.
I hope, Your Honor, this was being made plain in my opening remarks, which are what I might call preparatory. I should be grateful if my learned friend wouldn't interrupt.
But I wasn't interrupted.
Oh, then I must apologize to my learned friend. I thought he was. If he had been going to interrupt, then I should have objected strongly, Your Honor, because I have reached the stage in the case, and it's very important that I should have Your Honor's full attention.
Mr. Crabtree, you have my fullest attention, and I still haven't the faintest idea what you're talking about.
The point that I'm trying to make, Your Honor, that if this typewriter was not to be a second-hand typewriter, and this is really one of the paramount features of my defense, if it was not to be a second-hand typewriter, then, Your Honor, on page 53 of the correspondence, you will find a reference to the fact that the plaintiff, or was it the plaintiff's wife? I'm not quite sure, but Your Honor will find it when you find the page in the correspondence. Ah, Your Honor still hasn't got the correspondence. Usher! Please hand up to the learned judge a copy of the correspondence. That's the correspondence in another case, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I was confusing the two cases. Now, if Your Honor will bear with me...
I am bearing with you, Mr. Crabtree, as well as I can, but I must admit that I find it a rather hard burden.
Your Honor is too kind.
I don't intend to be, Mr. Crabtree.
It's very good of Your Honor to put me so fully in the picture. It makes it so much easier for me to adumbrate my defense. The first point, Your Honor, which stands out a mile. At least, I should imagine that Your Honor would think it stood out a mile, because from my point of view, it stands out a mile, and with Your Honor's great experience...
It doesn't stand out an inch.
Well, from my point of view, Your Honor, an inch is as good as a mile. And the point that I'm making is really the nub of the matter. When this interview took place between the plaintiff and the defendant, or I should rather say, when the telephone conversation took place between the plaintiff and the defendant's wife, I think it was, but it may have been his aunt. I'm not actually fully instructed on that matter.
Mr. Thursby says it's a case about a typewriter. I'm beginning to wonder whether it isn't an accident case or a claim between landlord and tenant or indeed something else.
It's about a typewriter.
Well, I'll hold you to that, Mr. Crabtree. You're sure the case is about a typewriter?
Oh, yes, Your Honor. That's what I've been telling Your Honor from the beginning.
Mr. Thursby, do you agree that the case is about a typewriter?
Certainly, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Crabtree. Let us assume for a moment that the case is about a typewriter. Well, carry on from there, would you please?
Well, the typewriter in question, Your Honor, has the usual equipment of a typewriter, except that it has no question mark.
With respect, it has a question mark. This has never been disputed.
Will my learned friend kindly cease to interrupt me? This is quite outrageous, Your Honor. I was just penetrating Your Honor's outer defenses when my learned friend says that the typewriter has a question mark. Well, of course it has a question mark. Every typewriter has a question mark. The question mark in this case is why my learned friend should interrupt me.
He interrupted you because you said this typewriter had not a question mark.
Your Honor has misunderstood me. Of course the typewriter has a question mark, as can be demonstrated to Your Honor by production of the typewriter. Oh, no. I forgot, Your Honor. The typewriter is in my client's possession, and he's lost it. It was destroyed in the fire, I think, or something of that sort. But one thing I want to make plain, Your Honor, beyond the peradventure, and that is that my client, at no stage, at no time, either in meal or in bolt, or in any way whatsoever, said what he is alleged to have said.
Mr. Crabtree, as far as I can make out, he's not alleged to have said anything.
Exactly, Your Honor. He said nothing. It's all very well for my learned friend to sit sneering there.
But I'm not sneering, Mr. Crabtree.
What are you doing there?
I'm just wondering.
Yes. You may well be wondering, Mr. Thursday. So am I. I'd like to know what I'm wondering about, Mr. Crabtree.
I mustn't ask Your Honor questions.
You may ask that one if you like.
Oh, I wouldn't take advantage of Your Honor's kindness. I prefer to go on in my own way, telling Your Honor what the defensive claim is. If Your Honor would be good enough to look at page 36. And so, Your Honor, I say with some confidence that this claim should fail without my calling any evidence at all.
I see. You've actually finished, have you, Mr. Crabtree?
I hope I haven't wearied Your Honor, but I wanted to be sure that I made my submission quite clear.
Well, Mr. Thursday, what do you say to Mr. Crabtree's plain submission?
Your Honor, what I would say is this. But before I actually say it, possibly Your Honor would consider... Oh, no. Perhaps I shouldn't put it that way. But actually, Your Honor, when my learned friend says what he does say, and in my submission, or rather I should put it, higher than that, I should put it very strongly indeed, Your Honor, in my submission...
Mr. Thursday, when you first addressed me in this case, your English was bad, but at least you made yourself intelligible. Now you're as unintelligible as Mr. Crabtree himself.
Well, I'm afraid it's catching, Your Honor. Mr. Crabtree has been addressing Your Honor for an hour and a half, and in trying to follow his line of thought, I'm afraid I got into his line of speech.
Well, there's no excuse for that at all, Mr. Thursday. Concentrate on what you have to do, and there's no earthly reason why this infection from Mr. Crabtree should spread.
Well, I better not say any more, Your Honor, because it has spread. I ask Your Honor to give judgment for the plaintiff.
In this case, the plaintiff is suing for the return of a typewriter. At least in the first instance, that was the claim. No, I don't think it was, as a matter of fact. No. Oh, dear. No, actually, the claim was for the price of the typewriter, or alternatively, for its return. And, it wasn't. But the thing I want to make plain in my judgment is that the plaintiff has said one thing, and whether the defendant has said another or not is not entirely clear. See, if the correspondence had been produced, it is possible I should have come to a different conclusion. So doing the best I can, and in all the circumstances, and having regard to the legal principles involved. Should I say what was this typewriter? Or rather, the argument that has gone round this time depends upon one salient fact. And that I have dealt with as best I can in what I have said previously. Although it might be that I... I could have put it rather better. In all the circumstances, and realizing that another judge might give a different decision, as I am the judge here, I can only act upon my own appreciation of the position, and I have nevertheless come to the conclusion, not without some hesitation, that the plaintiff is in the right and there will be judgment for the amount claimed with costs. I hope I've made the reasons for my judgment clear to you, Mr. Percy.
It's clear as mud.
What did you say, Mr. Percy?
I just said clear blood, Your Honor.
You kindly answer my question, will you? Are the grounds of my judgment plain to you?
As plain as if Mr. Crabtree had delivered the judgment himself, Your
Honor. In that episode of Brothers-in-Law, the parts were played as follows. Roger Thursby, Richard Bryars, Grimes, John Glyn Jones, Joy, Bridget Armstrong. Mrs. Thursby, Jean Anderson, Judge Prime, John LeMessurier, and Mr. Crabtree, Henry McGee. Crabtree Disease was written by Henry Thursby and Basil Dawson. The program was produced by Clifford Whitelaw.